with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We got a wide range of topics to talk about today. What a weekend in golf. Dominance, absolute dominance at the top of the men's and the women's game right now. And then did you happen to catch what happened on the Korn Ferry Tour?
No.
A 15-year-old finished top 25.
Whoa.
A 15-year-old kid.
Man.
Made his way into the top 25. Also, Weatherford's Quade Cummins struggled Saturday and then lit it up yesterday. He ended up tied 14th. And so when you look at the old points list, the season-long points list, you find Quade at number 12, which all he needs to do is finish in the top 30 to earn a PGA Tour card for next year. So, awesome weekend in golf. We can talk about the OU spring game. Anything to take away from it? You know, going in, and it's going to continue to be the talk all throughout the summertime into fall camp and until we see Oklahoma on the field. Offensive line, offensive line, offensive line, offensive line. Weakness, 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 weakness. So when they perform pretty well, is that a catch-22 to start bashing the defensive line? what's the best position group on the team? Was there anybody that got you excited about their prospects for the fall? And then already some portaling news out there, offensive line-wise, coming out of the spring game. And I would expect that we'll see some coming and some going all the way through until, what, the 30th when the portal closes. But I would imagine this week is going to be a pretty busy portal week for Oklahoma, like I said. And it won't all be coming because they still have to cut. I mean, they're above the 85 scholarship limit right now. So there's going to have to be some cuts made. And also probably maybe even down to as many as 10 to then make room for what they're trying to pick up and supplement, especially along the lines. NBA playoffs, Thunder hold on last night for game one win. Are you viewing this as, whew, got that one out of the way, now look out? You know, the young team got their feet wet, held on, didn't play very good, still won the game. And that was the Pelicans' chance to steal one in Oklahoma City. Or do you lean to, playoff basketball, they're not quite ready? What adjustments need to be made? Are there for either side? Any surprises from game ones around the league? I mean, it's always on this Monday morning after the NBA playoffs start. I know you're going to hear all throughout the sports world just hot, screaming hot takes about what we saw in game ones. Are we going to have any of those when we talk about what happened over the weekend? 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio, Penny News, Big Elk of Paragon TV, all kinds of great stuff located inside the free Paragon app. And, of course, us as well. Then the Skinny on Sports podcast is available anywhere podcasts drop. How are you today, Jared?
Good. How's your weekend?
It was, I would call it busy. Dream League on Saturday was awesome, as it always is. It was a little chilly early, but by the time the bigger kids were out there at 11, it turned off decent. And then, of course, yesterday was just gorgeous by the afternoon. Shout out to Rocky, who almost literally ripped the cover off of one of the baseballs as he hit it nearly to the trees behind the left field wall.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, ripped it. It was a no-doubter. And also shout out to Dorian / Shaggy, who hit his third home run in the last 2 weeks.
We're talking over the fence?
Over the fence, absolutely. Rocky hit it. I mean, I don't know how far you think the fence is. 100 foot? 150 foot?
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
I bet he hit it every bit of 50 feet over the fence. Shaggy, or Dorian / Shaggy. That's what he wanted me to call him, Shaggy.
I like it.
He hit it to straightaway center field, and it was probably 20 feet over the fence. Both of them, as soon as they hit it, it was like, that ball's out of here.
No doubters.
Yes, and I know that Shaggy hit two last week and one this week, so he's maybe trying to set some sort of record at the Dream League for most homers in a season. But no, it was a great time, as it always is. Ashley does such a wonderful job, and everybody out there helping. I know there was a softball team there that was the helpers.
Okay.
With the kids, and it's just awesome. It's funny to see, not funny. It's just awesome to see the personalities, how they change. You know, they get more confident. And so, like, you know, having to call him Shaggy, and then all of a sudden Lex, who is always one of the most entertaining kids to watch.
Yeah.
I called him Lex the first time. The next time he came up and he pointed at me, came over the fence and he said, "John Cena."
Oh,
so I was like, all right, not too bad for the green teams, John Cena. And I mean, he got a kick out of it.
You gotta get the music ready.
I know.
You gotta give me some. I need to take some notes here. I need to get this music ready.
Well, I didn't have like a walk up music
for sure,
or anything. I wasn't prepared for that, but
the,
no.
The John Cena tune, I don't know what the song's called.
Yeah, we need to figure that out.
Yeah, I'd get that one ready.
When you see Lex coming up to bat,
I love it.
Just start playing the John Cena.
Did he go up there and give the see me?
Oh, absolutely. That's no. It was so funny because he hit it like to in between shortstop and third. Hit it pretty hard, and I think it was Shaggy. Was on the other. No, wait a minute. Who was it? So I can't remember. Somebody out in the outfield. As Lex got to first, or John Cena got to first, I saw him out there. Yeah, they were giving it that to each other.
Great.
It was great. Oh, it was fantastic.
Great. That's so cool.
So, no.
So cool.
Great day at the Dream League. There's no doubt about it, as it always is. What about you?
Well, it's that time of the year, so we were at the softball field all weekend long. We did the math. Allie said we were out there 18 hours between yesterday, or Saturday and Sunday. So, but it was good. Good weekend. The little ones that you got the... Got the championship. The preseason tournament is what it was for the Kids Inc. And I mean, they just really had no trouble. We're really proud of them. And shout out to Sentinel. Played them in the championship game. They always give us a battle, and it was another battle in that championship game. They got a great squad. And then we, the 10U girls, we got to the championship game against. We had to come up through the losers bracket. Lost to Cheyenne. Met Cheyenne again, the losers bracket, and we lost in the bottom of the fifth to Cheyenne. So shout out to Cheyenne too. Always fun when we know we're going to get a good game when we play those two teams, Sentinel and Cheyenne. So it was a good start to the season. Good start to the season. Shout out to, got to give a, I'd be remiss not to say, mention that our one of our better players on the 10U team got hurt, and she's pretty much out for the season.
Oh, no.
Bracket riddling. And it's kind of a bummer, but despite losing her, I thought it was cool to see our girls come together and still get all the way to the championship game. But so a little curveball thrown at us, we'll adjust and be fine. It was packed out there. Saw a lot of great softball from all over this area, man. It always impresses me. I see teams from all over, and it feels like this season I've seen. You know, we've gotten our schedule, and there's, I can't remember which is which. One league has. Well, 8U or 10U has 19. The other one has 20 teams. And we're talking teams as far as ceiling going to come over here to be in the league. And Visai, and I think Granite's involved, Mangum. And it's neat. And it's what we speak of about, you know, seeing the future of softball. And you see it on baseball. And it's very bright on this side of 35. And it's really cool to see it right here in Oak City.
Yeah, I went after Dream League. Wyatt was with some buddies on the other side. And I was like, holy cow. I mean, down to the elementary.
It's great.
As far as parking, yeah. I mean, it was packed.
It's great, yeah.
I know that on Friday, we went down to Altus and watched 7th grade Elks play. And J-Mac's wife, Kim, they do the concession stand over there. She said that this weekend there's 41 teams coming on the baseball side. And you start having those numbers on the softball side. I mean, that's a lot of people, obviously, that come to town for those weekends.
Yep, I've heard city manager Tom Iveser say on the weekends like this that the concession stands are the most profitable restaurants in town on a Saturday. And when we got home Saturday, we were watching Triple D.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie said, he needs to come to our concession stand. We got some pretty good food at our concession stand. So that would be kind of funny to see.
That'd be awesome.
See Guy roll up and check out our concession stand.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Maybe get little pointers. Next thing you know, you got a mac and cheeseburger on your hands.
There you go. Because, man, when you start, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember his name, but at least on the softball side, he cooks a mean grilled onion burger.
Is it Rob?
I think so.
Former Schwan's man, Rob, isn't it?
I believe
Rob
so.
Rob Bruner?
I
think that's who it is.
And when he lights up that grill and you can start smelling it, because our first game yesterday was at 1. So we got there, and people asked, because I've had them, and someone asked me, hey, Jared, are the burgers any good in the concession stand? Yes. Do you not smell that? Go get one. It's really good stuff.
Absolutely. All right, so the Thunder, game one last night in Oklahoma City. You could tell it felt like the crowd had been waiting the 5 years it's been or what have you since a home playoff game last in 2019.
One guy didn't even get a babysitter. Did you see the baby?
It was just electric throughout. And Oklahoma City holds on to win 94-92. Obviously a completely different style of game as one would expect in the playoffs versus just a random Wednesday of the regular season for the Pelicans and the Thunder. Both physical, both defensively, they can both play defense. We saw that last night, and you see how the game gets gummed up a little bit. The freedom of movement on cuts through the lane isn't there, and so it really kind of comes down to who can make shots. And Oklahoma City has a couple of guys that can obviously create their own. SGA as good as anybody in the league at getting a bucket when a bucket is needed, and we saw that last night with the and one with 30 seconds left to put Oklahoma City up 3. Cason Wallace played really good defense on McCollum, but even saying that, McCollum had a clean look, although it was off balance. It's still a clean look at a game winner from the left wing that just hit the back of the rim and was out of there. So OKC holds on 94-92. Do you kind of lean more towards, okay, That was New Orleans' chance to steal one in Oklahoma City. Young guys got their feet wet. Now they'll be more into it as far as comfortable coming out in Game 2 on Wednesday. Or are you thinking, it's kind of what I was scared of. These guys just aren't quite ready for that playoff stage.
I was thinking after last night, and I thought about more this morning, we didn't have a chance to preview this matchup because
we didn't know it.
But we could have talked about on Friday the fact that the Thunder hadn't played in a week, and the Pelicans have played 2 games since then, and so I probably should have, and I thought about it after the game. I didn't think about it before because I'm thinking, what's going on in this game? It was wipe your brow, a win's a win. Let's move on. Got game one. But I thought, there might be a little rust involved. They got that rest. They played so many games through the regular season and then just stop for a full week. And you got to sit and wait for an opponent they have shoot-arounds and practice and everything. But still with the unknown of, who are we playing? We don't even know who to prepare for just yet. And so you're probably going through different scenarios. Well, if it's the Pelicans, this is how we get them. If it's the Lakers, this is how you're whoever. So I kind of equated it to that a little bit. Just the full stop of a week, stoppage of play for them, and now getting back into it. So fortunately, the good thing is being the one seed, you got to get back into it on your home court. So I think now that they got that game one, they're fine. I think game two will be much different. I think Thunder will be just fine at home because now that rhythm's back and everything. Yeah.
Think about this, to your point. I think I heard somebody talking about this on Friday afternoon. Once it gets to Saturday, So Saturday afternoon down in New Orleans is game three.
Mm-hmm.
The Thunder will play two games in 13 days.
Yeah.
They played the Sunday when you saw them, all last week off, and now just have played two games in 13 days before it finally starts kind of going every other night. I think that's a great point. That's, you know, you saw Denver was the same way on Saturday. Took them a while to really kind of get engaged, and then all of a sudden when they did, now they kind of held the Lakers at bay better than what the Thunder did. But, yeah, I think that's a fantastic point that, you know, everyone, and here's the deal. For the one and the two seeds in both conferences, not only have you not been playing, but your opponent has. And your opponent has been playing playoff games.
Yeah.
Even into the even back to the regular season before even the play-in. You know what I mean? They've mm-hmm. been, you know, high leverage matchups. And so I tend to think Oklahoma City will acquit itself better in game two than they did in game one. I think we saw the natural improvement throughout the course of game one itself. Yep. As guys got more comfortable with what playoff style basketball is going to be. AJ on the text line brings up a play because I was going to kind of ask, you know, some plays that were memorable. And yeah, that block from Chet
that was huge.
Down the stretch was just a huge play. Obviously the SGA and one was pivotal. But I think a lot of the things are defense. You know, even that one stretch, minute left or whatever it was, New Orleans got about seven chances at it, and they still were able to kind of hold them off, you know. Yeah. And at that point, everybody screamed at the TV, get a rebound.
Oh,
and finally they did.
Yeah,
and
by the way, if you're just now tuning in, get used to that. That's going to frustrate you, I think, right? That's been to the bugaboo about the Thunder all season long.
At times it can be, and it's even accentuated by this matchup, I think, with obviously Valanciunas is something that the Thunder just really don't have an answer for. You know, 13 points, but 20 rebounds, 9 of those on the offensive glass. Compare that to the entirety of the Thunder team, they had 8. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, he had more offensive rebounds than the rest of the Thunder. Here's the thing about last night is where they make up possessions is forcing turnovers and not turning the basketball over. Thunder with 13 turnovers committed. That's a huge number for them. They're not, you know, they're normally down in the single digits,
yep,
right around 10. And that other number on the other side is, you know, you get out rebounded by what? Excuse me, 8, 52, 44. In a normal game throughout the season, they make those 8 possessions up by forcing turnovers and not turning the ball over. Last night, just a +1 in that category. Well, then all of a sudden, you look down at the shots, and New Orleans taking 11 more shots. So that's something that, yeah, absolutely to monitor throughout the playoff run. It's something that they're going to have to. It's eventually, I think, they're going to have to sort of address it with some kind of move. Obviously, it can't happen this year. But I think that's maybe the final piece of the puzzle at some point. Now, who that is and how it looks, I don't know. But for now, you're going to have guys, you know, Giddey can't have 3 rebounds. Giddey has to grab 7 or 8 rebounds. And even though we only played 20 minutes, he's got to have above 5 in those minutes. You know, he's really been a key guy as far as the rebounding game when Oklahoma City has played great. And so, you know, he's a guy that he just has to have more than that. But all in all, I think we'll see a better performance in game two on Wednesday.
Yep.
And honestly, as bad, quote unquote, bad as Oklahoma City played, I think you got to feel pretty good as a Thunder fan that they were able to hold New Orleans off, not let the seed of doubt creep in with a game one loss. And now I really think that Wednesday will be better and Oklahoma City is going to win the series in about 5 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you could hold. Now, they are what statistically the best three point shooting team. I don't think you could hold them to just 10 to 31%. As the stat line says, I think that improves too. And I don't know who said it. It was a New Orleans player. It was after the first quarter. It was like 17-17. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking at that score. I'm like, I've seen high school games score more points in the first quarter. And someone asked, what's going on? How are you? And he's like, well, I think, and he said it best. He said, I think we're both nervous. I think we're both coming out a little jacked up and nervous. I can't remember who they were asking about that. And I thought that too. I thought they're, you know, the Thunder have had, a week to sit on it and think about, okay, first playoff game here in 5 years, and the whole city is depending on us. We're the one seed. They're expecting us to win. And where I went off the gate when Chet hit that three, I thought, okay, they're going to be fine. They're going to – because sometimes shots like that just immediately just knocks that rust off and buries those nerves. But I think there's something to that too, that there was a lot of nerves involved.
Yeah, nerves and also just the adrenaline.
Excitement. Yeah. And, yeah, and all that.
Yeah, because, you know, early on it seemed like, shots wide open, threes were hitting the backboard. You know what I mean? Just like, whoa, what is that from different guys? And then they settled in. I thought, we mentioned the one block, but Chet with five blocks, that's going to maybe not that high a number, but that's something that I think we'll get accustomed to in these playoffs, is him protecting the rim. Mm-hmm. You're going to see, he made two out of six threes.
Three of his five in the first quarter.
Yeah, it was right at the first.
Yeah.
But that's, 15, 11, 11 rebounds. He's going to have to consistently be a double-digit rebounder and block three or four shots. I think as much as it was, his offense was probably a little bit better in the regular season than anybody realized or thought it could be. I think what you're going to see in these playoffs, especially as a young dude, is how A++ a rim protector he truly is. And you're going to kind of see what the future holds for Holmgren defensively. And as his offense catches up, we may end up with just a monster of a player. Any adjustments outside of just rebounding the basketball better and don't turn it over? I think they're correctable things. I don't know that there's some huge matchup change that needs to happen. I would imagine on the New Orleans side that they would probably try to figure out a way to get Brandon Ingram away from Lu Dort. Lu Dort just locked him up.
Yeah.
5 of 17. He scored 12 points on 17 shots. It's wildly inefficient for a player like that. And Lu Dort was a huge part of that. To the point, even on the broadcast down the stretch, where they were talking about, whoever Lu Dort's guarding, don't throw them the ball. Don't let him get involved.
Yeah.
He was that magnificent on the defensive end.
Yeah. No, outside of any of, rebounding, and hopefully they don't make those changes away from Dort. But, just shoot the ball a little better. But, again, at home, second game, I think that'll all take care of itself. And good teams find a way to win, whether it be by 2 or by 20. And they did. They found a way to win.
That's exactly right.
I'm not throwing up big red flags because it was a 2-point win over the 8 seed.
There's a big part of me that thinks that was their only chance to win a game. Especially in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
There's a big part of me that wants to come in here and say the Thunder could not have played worse and still won. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think we'll see in game two whether or not that's a true statement, or if maybe this team just isn't quite ready for a long, sustained run. Maybe good enough to win this one, but we'll see about, who's next and having to improve in order to continue. Speaking of the rest of the league, no road team won. All 8 series are 1-0 in favor of the home team. You always hear the series doesn't start until someone wins a road game. Well, apparently the series haven't started yet because it's 1-0. Everybody at home held serve on the home floor. What surprised you the most?
Maybe the Clippers winning and Harden playing good in the playoffs. I know it's game one. It's only one game. He's kind of traditionally been blah in the playoffs. But the Clippers winning, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Kawhi did not play, right?
No.
Yeah, so I figured that would have been given Dallas a slight edge because they were – at full health, clearly. So that's really the only surprise. The others, I think, went by way I thought they would.
I was surprised with the margin. The Clippers just beat the brains out of Dallas.
Yeah.
Allowing 8 second quarter points, 56-30 at halftime. And you're right. Harden was great. 28 points on 8 of 17 shooting, 6 of 11 from 3. Paul George with 22. Zubac with 20 and 15 rebounds, which that's probably one of those things that people may have overlooked a little bit. the advantage that could be created against Dallas, because they're a little bit like the Thunder in the fact that they really don't have an answer for that kind of guy. Doncic scored 33, but it took him 26 shots to do it. He's got to be way more efficient than that. Kyrie was fantastic with 31 on 18 shots. But yeah, the Clippers, they have the ability, even without Kawhi, but with Kawhi, man, they have the ability to lock people up defensively. Russ has accepted kind of his role off the bench, and he scored 13 on 5 of 8 shooting. But he can. We all know when he puts his mind to it, that dude can guard. You know, George can absolutely defend on the perimeter. And then, of course, Kawhi is one of the best there is at it, and he wasn't even in the game. So I was surprised by the margin there. Also, the other one that surprised me a little bit was the game before the Thunder last night. And at Milwaukee, a team that seemed like they were on the ropes going into the playoffs. And, of course, no Giannis, Antetokounmpo. And, man, they just beat up Indiana. 69-42 at halftime. I don't know that I saw that coming, but Dame was great.
You still have Dame.
Yeah, scoring all those points. But I think the 40, not the fact that Milwaukee scored a bunch of points, because, yeah, you're right, Dame, Chris Middleton, those guys have the ability to score, but it was on the other end, only allowing Indiana 42. Indiana's been one of, if not the highest scoring team in the league all season long. And, man, Milwaukee defended them unbelievably well in that first half. Held them to 8 of 38 from 3 throughout the game at 21%. So without Giannis, I was a little bit surprised at the margin of victory. And quite frankly, a lot of people thought Indiana might even be the favorite without Giannis, even though they don't have the home court. And Milwaukee totally dispelled that. Minnesota.
Yeah, that one, you talk about margin. Yeah, that one, I picked Minnesota, not officially, but in my mind, I picked Minnesota in this series, but I didn't think they'd beat the Suns down like that.
Man, Anthony Edwards has the ability to get white hot. There was a run there in the middle to the end of the third quarter where, I mean, he just made threes. It didn't matter who was guarding him. It didn't matter if anybody was guarding him. They couldn't guard him. And he was just awesome in that last little, like, four-minute stretch to finish the third quarter, in which Minnesota just turned, like, an 8-point game into a 25-point game. Just bam, like that. it was a good opening week. And now we see throughout the next few days if anybody can earn a split and go back to their home floor tied 1-1. I think,
so let's just go,
like, who might do it?
Let's just go day by day. All right. So tonight, who do you think has that shot? Matt, you think it's Philly?
Philly.
At New York?
It just, man, the only problem is Embiid just doesn't look quite right. You know, I think down the stretch of that game the other day, if Embiid is 100% Embiid, Philly has a really great chance to win that game against the Knicks. But he's a little hobbled. But if it's, you know, I'm not so sure the Lakers didn't give their best shot and came up short. Mm-hmm. And then Orlando, man, who cares? I didn't even know that series. I didn't even know who won the game until I looked it up a second ago.
Yeah, that series.
That series is blah.
You're not giving them much hope for their next round chances. Yeah, I agree with you. I think 76ers are the best chance to do it tonight anyways to get that road win over the Knicks. But kudos to the Knicks. I mean, I know the East was so lopsided with Boston running away from everybody, but New York and the NBA have been craving the Knicks to be good for a long time, and there they are, a 2-seed.
Yeah, and really,
still no one's really talking about
it. I was going to say, in a really quiet 2-seed, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Because of Boston's dominance, it almost – It really does kind of feel like everybody's just waiting on the finals.
Right.
Out of the East. Man, Jalen Brunson, tough shooting night of 8 of 26. But down the stretch when they needed buckets, he got them buckets. And so, you know, I think that's the one thing you also see. Sometimes guys just go nuts. And then other times it's like a little bit of a struggle. But when you need them the most, they perform. And I think Brunson was like that. SGA was a little bit like that last night. You know, and I talked about as far as Embiid moving around, what's crazy is he doesn't even look close to 100%, and he still had 29-8. You know what I mean? 8 of 22, shot a bunch of threes. And I think, honestly, that 8 attempts from 3 shows you that he isn't completely healthy when he's settling for 8 of those.
Right.
Instead of getting downhill to the rim or posting up. But a good weekend so far for the NBA, no doubt about it.
Yep.
Jared, I think we all kind of forget a little bit about the late nights with the Western Conference playoffs.
I forgot how much it hurts.
But
the next day.
I will say the one good thing is when you think about the series, you know, you've got Denver and L.A. You really were in kind of hoping that that series would match up on the same nights as the Thunder series, because then there's the obvious early spot would be us, the late spot would be them. That hasn't worked out quite so well. But on Wednesday night at 8:30, where do you want to be? None other than the Boomtown Grill. Hang out at the Boomtown Grill, 12 big screen TVs, beers on tap, wine selection, smoked old fashioned. Oh, and also awesome food. Pizzas, pastas, burgers, sandwiches, salads. They got everything at the Boomtown Grill. 2103 South Main in Elk City. Open every day of the week, 11 to 10 on Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. Saturday afternoon, 2:30, perfect lunch spot to watch the Thunder in New Orleans in Game 3.
Allie and I hit up lunch there the other day.
Yep, go visit that Boomtown Grill. It's awesome. All right, OU spring game. The offense held the lead throughout most of it. The defense made a comeback, you know, with the point system and all that. Offense ends up winning the game. But what, if anything, can you take away from what we saw on Saturday?
I like the potential connection between Jackson Arnold and Deion Burks. That for the next 2 years, we hope, unless Burks goes pro, could really be good. It looked really good. They look like they're in sync. Looks like Deion Burks is going to step into, it looks like he might be in that slot position, that slot role. And nothing against Drake Stoops, but Deion Burks looks like he's way more athletic and quicker, and that adds a whole other element into this offense. So that excited me from what I saw. You can't take a lot from the spring game one way or the other. It's more or less a glorified scrimmage, and you're not going to see a lot. But you can see some skill things, and that was really cool. It was Jackson Arnold. Jackson Arnold looked good. His arm looks just as sharp. But Burks looks like he's going to be those guys that are going to have an immediate impact on this offense.
Yeah, you mentioned the slot. I heard those guys talking kind of pregame on the airwaves. I think it might have been Trammell that had stopped by. And he mentioned that slot position and how it's been kind of a possession type spot in the last couple of years with Drake. I mean, he was reliable as you could possibly be, but this is a new dimension back toward maybe the Sterling Shepard type, where not only is there possession there, but there's also explosive play capability out of that slot position. And I think we're going to come to it here in a little bit as far as position groups, but man, when you think about who wasn't out there that will be in the fall. You know, you see Jaden Gibson, and you're hearing rave reviews about how much better he's gotten. He looks bigger. He's always been tall, but he looks like he's put on some weight. And then, of course, Nick Anderson broke out a year ago. Andrell Anthony coming off the knee injury. Jahlil Farouk is still around. I mean, you start to see, you know, the makings of a really, really good spot as far as the wide receiver room at Oklahoma, and Burks, at least in the spring game, was everything he was hyped up to be. And I don't think there's any doubt that anybody that watched that came away going, well, that guy was the star of the show. And he was. He was just awesome. Offensive line-wise, I think one would have to say they did better than what would have been predicted. I mean, if you just listen to anybody and everybody talk about what's upcoming for Oklahoma in the SEC – it's doom and gloom because of the offense on the offensive line, and I thought they held up pretty well. Now, does that mean the defensive line isn't ready for the SEC? I guess we'll find out. But at least in that spring game, I think there's some young guys that have maybe been written off that were really highly recruited guys that haven't found the field yet. Josh Bates being one of those at center. Now you wonder, with the commitment of Branson Hickman as a portal guy from SMU, where does that kind of put the line? But I thought there were some of those young guys that we've heard about, hadn't really seen much, but I thought the O-line held up pretty well, considering what was – and maybe the expectations were so low that just seeing a pocket form two or three times was more than we thought.
Were the expectations so low, people thought it would just be air. Yeah. It'd be nothing, and they'd just be pushed on their backsides every snap. This is still a D1 high-performing program, and they're still going to have guys there that are formidable. So now, is it at the level of SEC? That's yet to be seen. But to preface this all this, I only watched like highlights. I didn't watch the whole game. I was preoccupied, but I did start getting some texts from guys who were there and guys who were watching. Said O-line's okay. That's, you know, it wasn't they were good, and they were kind of having a conversation while I was coaching a game, but. When I was able to go back and read, like, yeah, well, it's not great, but it's okay. It's good. It's not bad. It's not as bad as we thought. It's not as bad as we're being told by the talking heads. So that's kind of, I guess that's a positive, because they can get better. And we know that me and Bill will get them better. And it looks like already this game and having some portal movement coming in, we'll talk about that. So the O-line is not decimated. It's there. I think it's going to be okay. Not great. Not bad. It's okay.
And I think health is going to be a huge part of it.
Yeah, because one guy goes down.
The depth of it may be the real problem, at least for the next, you know, this season coming up.
Yeah, I liked, you mentioned the defensive line. This is why I hate the spring game, because, what's wrong? There's nothing wrong with them. Some stuff that just stood out for me. Ethan Downs is continuing to grow. He looked bigger to me. Or is it just because I haven't seen him since December? It just looked like he got bigger. I think that the edge rusher, the edge is going to be really good, including him. And I think Kanick's going to be good. I think he's going to take that next step.
Ooh,
you don't think so?
Ooh, did you hear Dusty, hot mic?
No.
Ooh, Dusty, not a fan.
Not a fan?
Not at all.
He had five tackles the other day, or Saturday. But my point is, in the box right there, I think that's going to be – because if they can get to the quarterback in the SEC, I think you'll have a lot of success. I think that group, just a couple I mentioned there, obviously Stutzman, I think they're going to see – they're going to make a lot of quarterbacks nervous in the SEC.
Yeah, the guys that are going to have to play and have to live up to the hype, PJ Adebowale, he looks the part, man. I mean, as far as, you know, guys that need to get off the bus first – PJ is at the top of that list. Now, can he put it together? You know, he had what would have been a sack at one point there, going around the offensive line. Yeah, I think that's a spot that has a lot of ability and a lot of the hype that needs to live up to it once the season comes around.
McCullough.
Yeah, you see the potential. Just a matter of whether or not they can put it all together. I thought linebacker-wise, I'll tell you a guy that has kind of been waiting on to show up, and he looks completely different, not only the way he played, but also his body. It seems like he kind of slimmed down just a little bit, is Kobe McKenzie. That dude looked awesome. Like, to me, he was the best linebacker on the field throughout the entirety of the game. And he's a guy that was way high recruited to play in the middle of the defense and maybe just kind of figuring it out. But he, as far as a guy thinking about what you've seen from him so far in his career to what we saw on Saturday, Kobe McKenzie looked like he may be about to become what everybody thought he might be when he was recruited to Oklahoma. I thought he looked outstanding. The running backs, let's talk about position groups. What do you think the best position group is on Oklahoma's team?
I'll go back to the receivers, with, you know, Burks, Trey Brown, I think, is going to take that next step. I like them. Coupled in with the tight ends. And can I even go as far as say the running backs? I'm really interested to see what this new offense was going to look like, how everybody's going to get involved. But overall, I'd say the receivers. What do you think about the running backs? I don't want to step on your toes.
Ninth are fantastic.
Yeah, was that yours or?
I would go back to the receivers though.
Okay.
Because not only what we saw on Saturday, but you think about what didn't play. Of Nick Anderson, Farouk, Andrell Anthony.
Yeah.
To go with the guys that played, I think it has to be the receivers with the addition of Burks and what he looked like on Saturday. But the running backs aren't far behind. I thought Hicks was really good for a redshirt freshman. Obviously, we saw Sawchuk kind of come into his own at the end of the season last year. And then also, the guy that's kind of forgotten, and Venables was asked about him, and he mentioned that he had a good spring, but they just wanted to get some other guys' reps, was Javonte Barnes. He was better than Sawchuk the first year. Sawchuk didn't play until the bowl game, and then all of a sudden he kind of burst on the scene, and everybody's like, where has this guy been? Well, he'd been hurt. Javonte kind of had that year last year. Kept on waiting to see him kind of reemerge, and he never did. And then we find out it's because he was dinged up all year long. And so I think the running backs, the receivers, for me, it would be receivers one, probably running backs two, and then probably secondary three as far as the strength of this team. And kind of a it's just one game we saw. But another sneaky, really good position group on this team, and this is a complete 180 from last year because it was kind of one guy and then who knows, his quarterback. I think you have a very reliable backup in Casey Thompson. You obviously have a guy that could be an absolute superstar in Arnold. And you also have Michael Hawkins, who looks like he –
you look good.
I don't – here's one for you. I don't know if we ever see Michael Hawkins play a meaningful down at Oklahoma because he's too good to sit. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I hope he stays around. His brother just committed as a guy that's going to be a senior this year, so maybe that helps. His dad played it, all that stuff, right? But, man, he looked the part. And will he get impatient waiting on – or, in a perfect world for him, he would be so good he'd beat out – nobody really sees that part coming. But will he be content? This could be an easy redshirt year because of Thompson's presence. And depending on what would happen, if it was a short-term thing, I think you'd see Casey. But if it was, heaven forbid, a long-term issue, there might be a real discussion about whether or not he can push to be the guy. So I think quarterback is in pretty good spot for OU.
Are you calling for a controversy?
No. But
they are in Austin, by the way.
I saw today Quinn Ewers unliked everything Texas on social media.
Oh no, he's going into the dark. He doesn't want to hear anything about it. No, the quarterbacks are great. I hope we see more booty.
Yeah, you ran that one in.
Yeah, they call it the booty call.
Yeah, but I hope we don't. It's not a good sign for OU season if we see a whole bunch of booty. The season will be booty if we see the general out there.
It'll be a dirty booty.
Was there anybody that excited you?
Well, we knew what we were getting with Jackson Arnold, so that doesn't excite me, right? That's not a knock on him. He played great. I keep going to Burks, though. I just keep going to Burks.
I'll tell you who I'm excited about seeing and how much he develops. Jaden Jackson, true freshman. The hype is around David Stone, right? And I think David Stone is going to be fantastic by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah.
But at least for next season or what it looks like right now, Jaden Jackson looks more.
I didn't even mention David Stone about mine.
He looks more physically ready to go as a true freshman defensive tackle. They were double teaming him, and he was kind of holding his own already. Jaden Jackson looks the part. I think he could be fun, and obviously that tandem is going to be a really important piece moving forward throughout their careers, however many years that is, getting Oklahoma established in the SEC, having those guys that everybody else in the league will have. Those two guys may be like the most two important players outside of a quarterback for Oklahoma's progression in the SEC. And getting those guys playing early, showcasing their talent, that then leads to more of those guys coming. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's that's something that I think the coaching staff pays attention. They realize that, right? That we get these two guys. One obviously is an Oklahoma kid, was an IMG, but then his buddies at IMG, they go together. And man, he looked the part. There's no doubt about that.
You know, outside of the obvious worry of the offensive line, is there another position group that we got to go, huh, they need work?
Defense tackle. I don't think there's any doubt. I don't know that you want to have to play those two guys as true freshmen in the SEC, but one, they may be good enough to for you to not be able to keep them off the field, and two, that's a position of thinness that needs – you know, that's, I don't think there's any secret around that. When you look at the guys that were there as far as portal goes, you know, three or four defensive tackles, guys that they really probably want to supplement what they've got already. You know, Dominic Williams from TCU is a freshman All-American. You know, that type of guy that they're needing immediate help from. And I'm sure they probably would just as soon it not be Stone and Jackson that have to,
yeah,
you know, play the bulk of the major minutes. Not that they wouldn't be rotational players, but I don't know that you want them out there for 70 snaps.
Yeah.
But if you can get them for 30 and then have somebody else for the other 50 or what have you, then I think you're on to something. You're killing two birds with one stone with David Stone and Jackson.
Yeah.
You're able to showcase those guys off a little bit while also having plenty of depth and experienced depth for that trip into the SEC. Yeah, and on the text line, special teams, kicker, punter. Who knows?
You don't know.
It's a, you know, the 145-yard miss by the Florida State transfer. That's something that I think is going to be an ongoing battle, and we'll see what happens in the fall.
Any concern for the secondary? You know, we're raving about the receivers, but is that because the secondary needs some work? Or
look,
it
wasn't
gonna be
out
okay
there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You had a bunch of guys that weren't out there that will be in the fall.
Right.
I don't have a lot of issue.
It's not a big deal.
I don't. Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of other stuff to worry about besides that spot.
Yeah.
Then I think that you could have some worry about.
Again, that's why I hate the spring game, because anything that good happens, you got to go, well,
goes
is that because
yourself.
The other side is bad?
Right.
Yeah.
And the key, the major key throughout the entirety of Saturday, nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
So that's probably the best thing that happened on Saturday. Wrapping up a Monday with an unbelievable weekend in golf. Nelly Korda. Fifth straight win. Only Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorenstam twice have ever done that on the LPGA Tour. This one a major. Scheffler continues to absolutely dominate. I think he's made, what, $15 million in the last month, 2 months, or whatever it is. I know there's the running total of how much more Ted Scott has made than Rory McIlroy on the tour. And if you don't know who Ted Scott is, that's Scotty's caddy.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Scotty's caddy has made more money this year than Rory McIlroy. So that's a pretty funny joke. But man, it does. It's funny that Annika was one of the players that Nelly Korda was able to join with the five in a row, because this does remind me, with the men's and the women's game and the domination at the top, it reminds you of when Annika was going strong at the same time Tiger was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's very good. I'm surprised you're following LPGA.
Why?
I just am. I'm impressed.
Well, it's historic, first off.
I'm quite honest. I couldn't name one person.
You can't?
Now I got one to name.
Nelly Korda.
Very good.
Her sister Jessica plays, too. And then there's a whole bunch of Koreans that are really good.
Right.
But right now, it's Nelly and everybody else, and it's Scotty and everybody else.
Yep.
Scheffler finished off the Heritage, or the RBC, this morning.
Oh, why that? Was there a delay?
Yeah.
Did I miss something there?
Yeah, they were delayed about 3 hours yesterday.
I got you. And so it's already done. They already finished
They finished this morning, yeah.
Okay.
He's already won. And it's back-to-back wins, signature event. You know, they just – these two – over the last couple of months, only a Jaeger bomb. Jaeger bomb is the only person that's beat either Nelly Korda or Scottie Scheffler. And he beat Scottie by a shot a couple of weeks before the Masters. That's an unbelievable run. It really is. Yeah. And here's the crazy thing. That might not be the most impressive thing that happened in golf over the weekend. Either one of those two continuing to dominate might not even be the most impressive thing. You know why? A 15-year-old kid named Miles Russell is the youngest player ever to make the cut on a Korn Ferry Tour event. He tied for 20th.
Wow. Do you think his mom drops him off with some lunch money and his golf clubs? Say, have fun, honey. I'll be back.
I have no idea.
That's crazy.
He did qualify for next week's Korn Ferry Tour event as a result of finishing within the top 25. The youngest player since at least 1983. I'm going to guess 1983 may be like when they started keeping track of this. So since at least 1983, he's the youngest to finish in the top 25 in either a Korn Ferry or a PGA Tour event. That's incredible.
It is.
I refreshed Twitter before I could talk about it. Somebody had a list of things that Miles Russell wasn't even alive for because he's so young. One of them was 14 of the 15 Tiger Woods majors.
Can we not do this? I don't want to feel old today. I feel old. I don't want to be reminded how old I am.
Yeah, so that's what an unbelievable accomplishment for Miles Russell. Also of note at that Korn Ferry Tour event, Weatherford's Quade Cummins shoots 65 yesterday, 6-under. 65 vaults back up the leaderboard. Here's the deal. Going into Saturday, he was tied 11th after a 64 on Friday. It vaulted him up into a tied for 11th. Then he shot a 1-over par round on Saturday and dropped clear back to tied 49th going into yesterday. Then he shoots 6-under yesterday and ends up in the top 20. And now he's back up to 12th on the season-long points list. So Quade off to a very, very, very good start, the best of his career so far in the Korn Ferry Tour. And he's in a really, really good position to be able to stay in that top 30 and earn his PGA Tour card for next year. So really cool stuff on the golf course there at the Korn Ferry Tour, not only locally, but the young dude, 15 years old, that's just an incredible accomplishment. Also, of note locally for golf, Swasu, the ladies, in their conference tournament up at Cedar Ridge, Tulsa, Megan Brown, has the lead after 2-under par round. Lady Dogs in second at that conference tournament, but I was talking to Heston, Megan's brother, yesterday, and he's like, man, she's playing as good as she's ever played, and she's just like really close to being really, really good. Really good. So, obviously, awesome. Played really well. I know the Big 12 is this week, which means Ryder and the Sooners. So, Trace Hill won a tournament last week down in Texas at OCU. Their conference is coming up. So, start to see a whole bunch of the conference stuff happening on the golf course. And Western Oklahoma is really represented in a lot of this, right? I mean, this is just absolutely awesome. Megan's got the one-shot lead going into the second round today. As I mentioned, they're playing at Forest Ridge. At Broken Arrow. Lady Dogs 8 shots behind Henderson State going into today. So we'll keep you abreast of all of that. Obviously, is good stuff. Good stuff on the golf course. Can you imagine 15 years old?
No, I can't.
15 years old finishing in the top 25 in a pro event?
I could not imagine. I mean, you can't even drive there.
No.
I'm 15 years old. I was mowing lawns trying to make money. This guy is doing that.
Let's see. They're underway at Whispering Pines. Is that Tiger's course? I think it's a course he designed.
I think it is. I think you're right.
It's in Trinity, Texas. Oh, you're struggling out of the gate. Hmm. One over par. Rounding out the front nine right or even par through eight. All right. Good day. Plenty of NBA to talk about, obviously, with the games tonight. And then, of course, you know what else is coming up.
What's up?
NFL draft.
That's right.
Coming on Thursday. Plenty to talk about there. Everybody have a wonderful Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. Skinny on Sports right here on The Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.